Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website mentalfloss.com. Well, now that we're heading into the colder days of the winter season, here are a couple of weather-related questions. Question number one, what is the relative distance to the sun during the winter in the northern hemisphere? Is it A, the Earth is closest to the sun during the winter? Is it B, the Earth is furthest from the sun during the winter? Or is it C, the Earth is the exact same distance from the sun during all seasons? And question number two, the snowiest city on Earth is located in which country? Is that A, Canada, B, Japan, C, Russia, or D, Chile? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of December the 11th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1803, that composer Louis Hector Berlioz was born. French composer Hector Berlioz followed the ideals of 19th-century Romanticism in musical creations, such as the Symphonie Fantastique. Berlioz, born today in 1803. And it was 35 years ago today, 1985, that the single The Super Bowl Shuffle by the Chicago Bears Shuffling Crew was released. Members of the Chicago Bears football team, including Walter Payton and William the Refrigerator Perry, made up that group. The Chicago Bears went on to win Super Bowl XX a month later against the New England Patriots, 46-10. 1985, today, the Super Bowl Shuffle.
From both sides now. Come up and down, and still somehow, it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds.
Joni Mitchell, Both Sides Now, introduces our folk music news, entitled The Playback, Joni Mitchell Archives, Volume 1, The Early Years. Before she became an icon, Mitchell was performing at local radio stations and recording homemade demos. This is written by Hillary Hughes, published in Entertainment Weekly, December 2020 issue. This new box set of pre-frame material is both a time machine and an almanac for Joni Mitchell fans. The five-disc compilation, which the singer-songwriter curated herself, transports the listener back to the folk icon's earliest gigs, leading up to her 1968 debut, Song to a Seagull. The first 4 years of Mitchell's professional career are represented here, with 6 hours of unreleased concert reels, radio performances, and home recordings, including traditional folk songs, taped at her parents' home in 1965. If the studio versions of The Circle Game, Chelsea Morning, and other Mitchell standards are finished portraits, consider this treasure trove to be the first drafts, the brushstrokes, sketches, and outlines that eventually soundtracked her career. The collection offers multiple versions of various songs, which allow the listener to burrow into the nuance of her singing, playing, and storytelling prowess. Eastern Rain and Chelsea Morning shine as live recordings and radio sessions alike, as does Both Sides Now, the song playing in the background now, with three different yet equally gorgeous takes. Rarely do we get to hear a song before it becomes a classic, but this set gives us just that, incorporating family photos, childhood drawings, early reviews, and liner notes, lovingly written by filmmaker Cameron Crowe, a friend of Mitchell's. Archives, Volume 1, is a testament and a tribute to Mitchell's music, and this is given an A in this magazine.
I recall, I really don't know life at all.
Joni Mitchell, Both Sides Now. Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata introduces our classical music news. It's an article entitled 250th Anniversary of Beethoven's Birth. This is written by Nan Pincus, and it's published in WCPE's Quarter Notes, Winter 2021 episode issue. Ludwig van Beethoven's 250th birthday is December 16th this year. Everyone in the classical world is excited, and we at the Classical Station are no exception. Listeners can expect to hear a wide variety of Beethoven interpretations, from symphonies to concertos to chamber music and sonatas. Ludwig van Beethoven's work is as inexhaustible as it is thrilling. His stories are numerous and dramatic, often emphasizing his straddling of the moral and mortal and immortal divide, such as the story of his death, in which the Viennese sky split with lightning. In total, Beethoven wrote 9 symphonies, 5 of which are considered some of the most phenomenal ever written, 5 piano concertos, 1 violin concerto, 16 string quartets, 32 piano sonatas, 2 masses, 1 opera, 10 overtures, 10 sonatas for violin and piano, and 5 sonatas for cello and piano. Had he been born at a later date, it might have been said that he had a face made for radio, as he described his visage. Oh God, what a plague it is to one when he has so fatal a face as mine. But anything he was lacking in his physical beauty, he made up for with his beauty of his music. Just Us for Beethoven Fest from December 14 through 16, as the Classical Station celebrates Beethoven's life and music with fantastic releases, playing both landmark performances and contemporary releases that will be future classics. Thank you. The cast of Chicago singing Razzle Dazzle introduces our jazz, Broadway, and blues music news. It's an article entitled How Broadway Got to Boom Times from a veteran theater gossip, written by Charles McNulty, published in the LA Times on the 18th of November, 2020. Michael Riddell, the New York Post's mischief-making Broadway columnist more than two decades, has chronicled the incendiary flamboyance, the backstage dramas of megalomaniac producers, divas, and the cowering artist caught in the crossfire. His Walter Winchell radar is acutely attuned to upcoming flops, a prospect that never fails to get his tabloid juices flowing. He's been on furlough during the pandemic, so it's a pleasure to encounter his impish voice in Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway, Riddell's latest book of Broadway history, as rich in conflict as a Shakespeare history play, is enlivened by his piercing eye for showbiz detail. But it's also limited by a perspective more attuned to box office grosses than creative value. Riddell picks up the story where he left off in Razzle Dazzle, The Battle for Broadway, his earlier chronicle tracing the resurrection of Broadway from the recessionary 1970s through the British mega musical invasion of the 1980s and early 90s. The new 42nd Street is dawning, and with it, new financial burdens and possibilities. Riddell tells the story of how Broadway became a global brand in the 1990s, attracting high rollers with deep pockets and occasionally dubious ethics. The article skips down and ends with this. Singular Sensation ends stirringly at the curtain call of the producers for the first performance after 9/11. Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick, the show's stars, join hands with the cast and led 1,500 people in tears through God Bless America. Riddell tacks on an epilogue in which he argues that the last two decades have sprung from the commercial leaps and bounds the industry made in the 90s. Broadway, he concludes, is in the midst of its new golden age. It's an optimistic thought, but Broadway at the moment is closed. The economic reality is more dire than it was after 9/11. No one knows what will be possible when we reopen. Many are dreaming not of a restart of the Disney-fied Broadway Riddell celebrates, but rather a reset toward a more diverse, equitable, and artistically emboldened Broadway culture. Dave Brubeck's Take Five introduces our jazz music research and technology music news, playing five beats to the measure. This is published in NPR on the 26th of September, 2008, by Sarah Fishko. Lalo Schifrin's music for Mission Impossible is among the most celebrated themes in TV history, and one of the most appealing things about it, whether you're aware of it or not, is that it's in 5/4 time. Written for that iconic television series in the 1960s, the piece contains 5 beats to the measure instead of the more typical 3 or 4. Count and you'll see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You would think by now in our sophisticated world, 5-4 time would be commonplace. But in Western music, it's not, and it never was. In fact, pianist and writer Stuart Isakoff says that in the world of musical rhythms, things started out much more ambiguous and than they have become. There was a time, if we look back to medieval music, where you have endless streams of notes that form vague contours, Isakoff says. People tend to need some kind of an anchor to feel that there's some kind of organization happening, rhythmically, in the music. Michael Beckerman, head of the music department of New York University, points to Tchaikovsky, who wanted to try something a little different when writing in the 1890s. You know, we have Tchaikovsky's example, Beckerman says, the famous so-called waltz from the Pathetic Symphony, which is, of course, anything but a waltz. Tchaikovsky wrote the second movement of his celebrated Sixth Symphony in 5 with a three-note figure, a triplet, which acts as a kind of diversionary tactic. But if you count it, you hear it. 5, plain as day. Like other forms, time signatures, and musical devices, 5-4 time works as a means of personal expression. Tchaikovsky made it sound like Tchaikovsky. James Reese Europe, a Harlem musician working in the early 20th century, used it in a piece he wrote for a famous dance team of the era, Vernon and Irene Castle. Isakoff says the piece, called Castle's Half and Half, is part foxtrot, which is in 4, and part waltz in 3. When a restless Frédéric Chopin began experimenting and improvising, he produced a classically Chopin-sounding sonata movement that can be counted in 5. But if there was a moment when the 5-4 time signature exploded into the public consciousness, it was certainly the Brubeck moment. Dave Brubeck's excursion into 5 made his name and his fortune in the jazz hit Take 5, which is playing in the background now. With Take 5, what we have in Brubeck is a complicated rhythm, so that if you have one hand playing 2 and the other 3, that gives it a different swinging lilt, and therefore we end up with this pattern. There's no question that it heightened the awareness of it in a lovely and playful way. In Western music, Beckerman says 5-4 time is less than a tradition, more than a gimmick. I think it's also an idea, a throwing down a gauntlet in certain places and styles, says Beckerman. It was cool to do 5s and 7s, and I think that persists and lingers today. And it's sort of a way of making a certain kind of point about where you stand. It's also a way of saying, I'm not going to get stuck in 3s and 4s like everybody else. And in holiday pop music, we have this article entitled The 12 Days of Christmas, the story behind the holiday's most annoying song. This is written by Tanya Pye and published in Vox.com on the 1st of December, 2020. It might seem unbelievable given that the Christmas creep now begins before Halloween, but the true Christmas season actually starts on Christmas Day itself. That's right. December 25 marks the official start of the 12 Days of Christmas, the Christian tradition that shares its name with a relentlessly stick-in-your-head Christmas carol. Here are a few things you may not know about the song and the season. What are the 12 Days of Christmas? The 12 Days of Christmas is the period in Christian theology that marks the span between the birth of Christ and the coming of the three wise men. It begins on December 25, Christmas, and runs through January 6, the Epiphany, sometimes also called Three Kings Day. The 4 weeks preceding Christmas are collectively known as Advent. The history of the carol is somewhat murky. The earliest known version first appeared in a 1780 children's book called Mirth Without Mischief. Some historians think that the song could be French in origin, but most agree it was designed as a quote-unquote memory and forfeits game, in which singers tested their recall of the lyrics and had to award their opponents a quote-unquote forfeit, a kiss or a favor of some kind, if they made a mistake. Many variations of the lyrics have existed at different points in time. The article skips down and ends with this. Giving someone all the gifts in the song would be pricey. The PNC Financial Service Group's annual Christmas Price Index calculates the cost of all the gifts in the song based on current market rates. The total for 2019, the most recent year, for which numbers are available, comes to a hefty $38,993.59, or $170,298.03 if you count each mention of an item separately, which would amount to 364 gifts in all. And in local music news, we have this. The North Carolina Symphony brings the holiday spirit into your home. Streaming concert tickets, just $20. NCSymphony.org or phone 919-733-2750 or 877-627-6724 for more information and tickets. This is the Holiday Pops with Jingles the Elf. Saturday, December 19th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Jingles the Elf is the host. Lindsay Kesselman is vocals. Christopher James Lees, piano. Backed by popular demand, the hilarious Jingles the Elf joins the NC Symphony for a family Christmas concert, bringing joy, fun, and holiday spirit to everyone. Sing along with favorite songs you know and love, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Joy to the World. Plus, hear a special reading of Towards the Night Before Christmas. So how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is the relative distance to the sun during the winter? Is it A, the Earth is closest to the sun during the winter? Is it B, the Earth is furthest from the sun during the winter? Or is it C, the Earth is the exact same distance from the sun during midwinter as it is during all seasons? Correct answer? Answer A, the Earth is closest to the sun in the winter of the Northern Hemisphere. As noted in MentalFloss.com's 15 Surprising Facts About Winter Weather, every January, the start of the winter season in the Northern Hemisphere, the Earth reaches the point in its orbit that's nearest to the sun. Despite some common misconceptions, the seasonal drop in temperature has nothing to do with the distance of our planet from the sun. It instead has everything to do with which direction the Earth's axis is tilting, which is why the two hemispheres experience winter at different times of the year. And the answer to our second musical trivia question, the snowiest city on Earth is located in which country? Is it A, Canada, B, Japan, C, Russia, or D, Chile? And the correct answer is answer B, Japan. As noted in mentalfloss.com, Aomori City in northern Japan receives more snowfall than any major city on the planet. Each year, citizens are pummeled with 312 inches, or about 26 feet of snow, on average. That article in mentalfloss.com, by the way, adds that it sometimes snows where you least expect it. You wouldn't be shocked to see snow on the ground of Siberia or Minnesota when traveling to those places during the winter months. But northern areas don't have a monopoly on snowfall. The white stuff has been known to touch down everywhere, from the Sahara Desert to Hawaii. Even the driest place on Earth isn't immune. In 2011, the Atacama Desert in Chile received nearly 32 inches of snow, thanks to a rare cold front from Antarctica. So let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. A white Christmas just might be a nice cleansing way to exit 2020. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.